news. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It's time for the fastest 15 here on radio. Make him a little pause because you got to catch your breath before you start a sprint like that. Mississippi candidate for governor says a female journalist covering his campaign must have a male chaperone. She's gay. He's a Republican. And CNN is shocked, as is most of the media world, even though this is not the first time this happened. There's been multiple candidates, particularly in the southern regions, particularly religious folks that say, look, I don't want to have, Gary Bauer, remember in the 88 presidential race, or maybe it was, no, in the 92 presidential race, I think it was, or 96, one of those. When Gary Bauer ran for president, he had no business doing so, but he did it anyway. And much was made over the fact that he always left his door open if there was a female colleague there or had someone with him. And that was supposed to avoid both the temptation and the appearance of temptation for a male. But the shocking part here is that CNN and others are viewing this as gender discrimination. CNN had both the candidate Robert Foster and the reporter Larison Campbell on to explain why this is now an issue. Foster says, my campaign, it's my way.
I didn't want to end up in a situation where me and Ms. Campbell were alone for an extended period of time throughout that 15 to 16 hour day. And so out of precaution, I wanted to have her bring someone with her, a male colleague. And it's the other thing that I think is important to point out is that this is my truck, and in my truck, we go by my rules. That's my rule.
It's his truck. She wants to come along. You got to bring somebody else. Now, is it because you don't trust yourself? You can't control yourself? Is that it?
I trust myself completely, but I don't trust the perception that the world puts on people when they see things and they don't ask the questions. They don't look to find out the truth. Perception is reality in this world, and I don't want to give anybody the opinion that I'm doing something that I should not be doing.
Now, what does the journalist think about that? She jumped in to ask why she should have to jump through hoops.
I mean, but it's, again, your rule. Again, no other candidates have ever had a rule like this. And, I mean, okay, let's go back to the appearance.
Let's pause. Did I just say there was a candidate that had a rule like that? Yes, I did.
It's an impropriety thing. Why does it appear improper for a man to be with a woman? I mean, why wouldn't, like, a gay affair be construed if you were with a man? Unless, at the end of the day, what you're saying here is a woman is a sexual object first and a reporter second. People, when they see a woman with a man, are going to automatically assume that she's there for, you know, with an improper relationship because, again, they see a woman as a sexual object first and as someone who's doing my job second.
Now, let me pause here. I think there's a couple of things. One, the guy... people might assume a gay relationship. I've seen people try to make claims about two men. I won't name them because I don't want to be accused of spreading conspiracy theories about prominent politicians. But I've seen that accusation lobbed at some politicians that have someone that is close to them that is male, and they'll start some kind of rumor like that. But it's rarer because homosexuality is rarer, right? I mean, it just is. It's much more likely that a man and a woman would have something going on than two men, particularly if, you know, somebody's not out there. And so the appearance is going to make – it makes sense that the appearance fear would be between a heterosexual and a heterosexual situation. That said, now, you know, do I feel the same way as this guy? No. Do I think it's annoying for her? Absolutely. When she says that it would automatically mean that she's viewed as a sexual object, that's also not necessarily true because, you know, again, he says over a period of time, someone could make that inference. And given the virtual pitchforks and torches that go out nowadays, maybe they would start some kind of a rumor and the rest. You know, maybe it would be better to say, look, let's just put a dash cam in there. It's your truck. I'll buy you a dash cam. You know, let's get this over with. Here's the rest of the journalist.
Well, first of all, I'm a married man, and I made a vow to my wife, and part of the agreement that we've also made throughout our marriage is that we would not be alone with someone of the opposite sex throughout our marriage, and that is a vow that I have with my wife that I put that and my faith and my religion, that is the reason why we have that vow, above anyone else's feelings, including yours. And I apologize to you for that, that it may hurt your feelings, but I would much rather uphold my vow to my wife over anyone else.
Okay, so you might think it's ridiculous and stuff, but isn't there a part, what, I mean, am I crazy? I just feel like there's a part of me that says, look, if that's the thing, that's he and his wife's thing, they've got a Reagan trust but verify kind of thing going on at all times, because who knows why there's this great fear of cheating. Maybe they've had family experience in that area, or maybe not, I don't know. But it seems to me that he does have a point, that it's, you know, you don't have to cover that campaign. He's a long shot anyway.
He's a running for governor of the state.
Yeah.
He should be able to have a discussion with a woman.
I totally agree with that. But also, it is his truck, so he doesn't have to have any reporter alone with him at all. Like, you can cover the guy. That doesn't mean you're embedded with him at all times. So, no pun intended, by the way. I didn't mean to start a rumor about this guy. So, anyway, I just find it kind of fascinating because, you know, he's running as in a pretty conservative area, and there seems to be this fascination that he has that point of view, and I don't find it all that fascinating. Also, this is the best free publicity that this guy's had. Apparently, he had like a snowball's chance in getting traction, and now he's got more attention than he's ever had before. So, you know, there's that. The reporter here, I'd have to wonder why? Why are you following this guy around anyway? I don't get it. Given what I saw of his poll numbers today, I just didn't see it. Tacoma is thinking about using public funds to build a $300 million soccer stadium. This Gig Harbor soccer fan, Winston Sappenfield, says local teams need that field.
I think it's awesome. You know, I mean, it's not a bad thing that they were playing at a baseball field, but I kind of think that it'd be nice if they had their own soccer stadium.
Yeah. I love it when people say it would be nice. It's just, yeah, of course it would be nice, but not if everybody else has to pay for it, right? I mean, I live in Tacoma. I'm rooting for Tacoma. I don't understand why Seattle keeps building stadiums for various professional sports teams in places that are already jam-packed full of traffic and can't move people. I don't get that. But we have all these sports that pay people a lot of money, and they say that there's all this money out there, and yet for some reason they have to have taxpayers subsidize the locale of where they play. I don't understand that. And for people who get upset about huge salaries, well, if the taxpayers are subsidizing the place of business, putting on your show, so to speak, it's no wonder you can pay people more, because you're not really paying the true expense of the stadium. And then, of course, they get the deal to, you know, sell everything. And you know, I don't begrudge them. I understand that. If Chicago's doing it and Los Angeles is doing it and Houston's doing it, then if Seattle wants to compete, they're going to have to do it. But it seems to me that the losers are the taxpayers of every locality. And if a couple started to say no, others might say no as well. Now, for Tacoma, what bothered me is I know Tacoma, I've seen it in the newspaper a number of times where they're behind in a bunch of upkeep. It's like the state, you know, they say, well, we couldn't afford to do the potholes, couldn't afford, you know, do we have our infrastructure taken care of? Do we have money for that? And yet, you know, we're going to find money for the $300 million Tacoma soccer stadium. They've identified potential funding sources from Metro Parks, City of Tacoma, Pierce County, Tacoma Public Schools, new market tax credits, and public grants. It would bring 364 new full and part-time jobs, according to this study. You know, but again, did Tacoma Parks have extra money that wasn't going anywhere that I'm unaware of? I thought they were behind. I mean, last I checked, it was a few years ago when they filled the public the pool over at Titlow Beach in Tacoma. They filled it with cement or dirt or whatever. They got rid of it, even though that's where all the schools competed for swimming, because they didn't have the money for upkeep in the parks. And that was a tiny fraction of what we're talking about here. So I don't know where that money is coming from. Looks like the FBI wants to speak with you if you flew on Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire, arrested on sex trafficking charges. If you flew on his so-called Lolita Express, the charges against Epstein are pretty vast.
Epstein has been charged with one count each of sex trafficking and sex trafficking conspiracy for at least a four-year period covering the entirety of 2002 through 2005. He is alleged to have sexually exploited and abused dozens of minor girls at his homes in New York City and in Palm Beach, Florida. The girls were recruited in a variety of ways, usually by employees of Epstein and sometimes by fellow victims. The victims typically received hundreds of dollars in cash. The estimated dozens of victims were as young as 14 years old at time of recruitment. Children who provided Epstein massages while they were nude or partially nude. Children who were asked to engage in direct and indirect sex acts for money. Children who were enticed to do all these things at the hands of a man more than or nearly three times their age. Those who have been victimized by child sexual predators are frequently haunted by memories of these crimes well into their adulthood, often for the rest of their lives. They bear the burden of someone else's criminal behavior.
So if you flew on this pervert's Lolita Express plane, or alleged pervert, no, he's a convicted sex offender, pervert, if you flew on his plane, they want to talk to you. And the hint is, hey, we want to talk to you before we have to come find you. Much better if you just come forward right now and say, yeah, I was on the plane. I saw a report that Bill Clinton said he was on the plane, you know, just a few times, very limited. And then another report that, well, he forgot about, about 20 additional times, which means maybe he has to have that conversation as well. You know, I can understand why people on this plane wouldn't particularly want to step forward and have their name associated with this guy if nothing was going on, but they want to talk to you about what you might have seen. They want to talk about what behaviors you witnessed, whether it was with a minor or not, so they can get a better sense of this individual. And it looks like they're basically putting this out there because they think somebody's going to flip, and the first people who flip have a much better deal than anybody else who comes along, and it could end up with a number of celebrity kind of power, some of the elite and powerful indictments, additional, kind of like the college cheating scandal that's been going on right now. And I say, good, throw the book at all of them. I mean, if anybody's caught with underage kids and engaging in this kind of behavior, you know, throw the book at them. And I don't mean the book that lets them go out on work release for 5 days a week and, you know, hang out at their island paradise either. I mean, send them for hard time because that's where they belong. The Atlantic has a report that a new study's out showing that the reason anxious people might have more the reason people become anxious might be allergies or allergies hit more anxious people. It's a chicken or egg kind of thing. Kids with severe allergies seem to have higher rates of anxiety, according to a pediatric allergist at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Maya Nanda and her colleagues published a study that found that among 7-year-olds, allergies were associated with depression, anxiety, and symptoms such as being withdrawn. Kids with hay fever had a 3-fold risk of depression and anxiety. And even more evidence has supported that link, not just in children. A study of German adults that's come out in April that found a generalized anxiety was associated with seasonal allergies. And when you think about it and just pause, it kind of makes sense, right? Because if you want to go outside and relax, and the next thing you know, you're hit with allergies and a headache, you know, I can see where that would really start dragging you down. And then there'd always be this level of uncertainty. You know, you start the day feeling good, and pretty soon you're feeling miserable for no reason whatsoever, and it just tends to nail you there. New York Times. This is the month where the New York Times supposedly is cartoon-free on its international edition. They got rid of their political cartoons because of an anti-Semitic cartoon that depicted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as a guide dog wearing a Star of David collar tag and leading a blind President Trump. If you look at the cartoon, it was super creepy, and I was shocked to see it published by any kind of major publication. But what bothered me about it, and I know this incident is now pretty old, but what bothers me about their whole approach was, you know, one bad thing happens, and therefore the solution is to ban all political cartoons, which are, you know, they're steeped in American tradition of commentary. That doesn't make sense to me. You know, and I'm talking about the one frame. I know they've published some long form comic commentary, you know, whoop-de-doo. I think this is like if somebody said something bad on audio, you banning all audio, or somebody made a bad video, you ban video. It sounds to me like they had a bad hire, somebody incapable of taking a look at something and determining whether or not it should be published at all, and now they're punishing everybody else for it, which could be why people get so upset with the Times, the newspaper of partial record, I guess. Jaden Smith, the son of Will Smith, celebrity extraordinaire, he was also the star of the unfortunate sci-fi flick, what was it, After Earth, I think. Jaden Smith is trying to do something solid with his birthday. He's an actor, entertainer, and singer. He got a food truck, and he's got the I Love You restaurant. It's a movement that he says is all about giving people what they deserve, healthy, vegan food for free. And he is delivering this vegan food to the homeless, and he did it for his birthday. He said, today we launched our first day one food truck pop-up in downtown Los Angeles. Keep a lookout because this is the first of many. And a lot of people are very excited about it. I'll point this out. One, he says he's giving people what they deserve, maybe in a theological sense, but I think in a more everyday sense, it's more impressive that he's giving people food that they don't deserve, right? It's not that many of the people that are in that predicament, they've got addictions, they've committed horrible acts, they've estranged themselves from family and friends and other things. And so in one way, you could say, hey, this is food they deserve in a generic way. But I think it's even more impressive when you say, no, I'm giving this food to people who don't deserve it, because as a human being, we want to lift them up and we want to remind them of that humanity and that they could join, you know, the ranks of society again. You know, give them hope. And while I think it's a strange thing to choose vegan, like, I know he's adamant about it, healthy choices and all that, but I feel like there are times when you try to deliver the stuff that other people would want rather than what you think they should have. It's kind of like when you're picking gifts for Christmas, you know, and I've struggled with this in my life where I thought, this person should really have this book, but I know they're not really going to like it. What they really want, you know, is the fishing pole. And so you have to think, there are times when you just give it because, hey, this is what I think you need. I'm giving you what you need. But there are other times when you give people what they want. And I think, you know, if people are pretty hungry, maybe skipping on the vegan side of things would be okay. I'm not judging. Like I say, I think it's impressive. I haven't been a big fan of this young guy's work for the most part, but I think it shows some pretty solid parenting that he's out there using his money and fame to try and help people the best he can, and that's a pretty wonderful thing. The key to success is apparently talking about yourself in the third person, something Bob Dole, according to Saturday Night Live, has known about for a long time. So researchers at Bangor University analyzed 22 cyclists, and it turned out they did better if they kept saying, you can do it. You can do it, to themselves, talking about themselves in the third person. Get on it. You can do it. Tough it out. That was helpful in terms of strengthening endurance and making them achieve better results. So the next time somebody makes fun of you for talking in that creepy third person, say, research shows that's the best way to go. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.
Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. This is not Dory Monson. This is producer Nicole. Dory is on vacation, and so am I. Dave Bowes is filling in as a special treat. I've picked some of my favorite interviews from the last few months. So here we go. Dory with University of Washington's Cliff Mass.
Well, if you've been listening for the last week, you've heard my absolute frustration ever since the Seattle Times front page story came out that said that if we have extreme heat events that are being predicted by the year 2100, 725 people in Seattle will die. So I had one of the lead researchers, Dr. Christy Ebi, at the University of Washington on my show yesterday, and it didn't settle my frustration one bit. I'll get into that as I have another conversation with Cliff Mass over at the University of Washington, who has been blogging about this very issue. Cliff, always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
What was your first reaction? Because I tell you what, Cliff, I can't remember a story where I had a visceral reaction of, I've never seen such nonsense, as when this Times story came out last week quoting this research paper. What was your reaction?
Well, the first thing I did is I got the original paper that it was based on, and I read it carefully. And that didn't make it any better. There was just so many flaws with this whole study. To just give you a few examples, I mean, the whole connection between climate change and deaths didn't make any sense whatsoever. Among the things, it assumed that people would never buy air conditioners or anything else if, when things heated up, and extrapolated to, you know, the statistics in a way that I thought were very, very unreasonable. They didn't consider that cold waves kill people just as much as heat waves. I mean, I could go on and on, but there was just so many technical flaws with what they did. And that's not even talking about climate change.
Right.
Let me
jump in on that, because that was one of the first things I said the day the story came out. And then I talked to Professor Ebi about it yesterday, that I said in 81 years, do you know what the population of Seattle will be? No. Do you know what our primary energy source will be? No. How much air conditioning penetration will we have? And she said, no, we're taking Seattle as it is now in 2019, and we are dropping it into the year 2100, but with a forecast of dramatically higher temperatures. And I thought, well, that's one of the silliest things I've ever heard, because if temperatures move incrementally, man will adjust incrementally, won't he?
They will, but it's even worse than that. The climate assumptions they made were entirely unreasonable. They were using this very, very coarse global climate model that didn't have the mountain, the land water contrast, the Puget Sound, the cold Pacific nearby, the Cascades that protect us to a considerable degree from heat. All these things weren't in their models. And I thought, you know, they were making very unreasonable assumptions on what temperature change would be around here. In fact, to show you how crazy it was, according to their predictions, Seattle is going to be warmer than Los Angeles by the end of the century, and I think that's just silly.
Well, and when they said if global temperatures go up 5.4 degrees, that we'll have these occasional extreme heat events, and they said the mean temperature is the average of the daytime high and the nighttime low, and it'll be 97 degrees. And I said, so if it's 80 at night, it's going to be 114 during the day here, and even if global temperatures go up 5.5 degrees, I can't foresee that in the Seattle area. The whole thing just seemed to be based on stuff that was made up out of whole cloth to me.
Well, it's not made up, but it's using inappropriate models. So they're using models that don't have Puget Sound. I mean, the point is, we're never going to be 114. And one of the reasons we won't be 114 is that we have this cold water next to us, which their models didn't really have. Also, the more detailed climate models that have the terrain show things like the easterly flow that comes down and warms us during these heat waves will actually weaken under global warming. They didn't have the details that really will make all the difference.
The other point that I was trying to make is that they seem to blame, and she said, well, we're projecting temperatures from pre-industrialized times to now, which would suggest that industrialization is the evil that must be combated here. But I would make the argument that if industrialization has led to some small warming of the planet, that it has also provided unfathomable advances in medicine and technology that has extended the human lifespan by decades across the globe. And to point to only the evils of industrialization without considering the current and future possible benefits of industrialization, again, that doesn't strike me as science at all.
Well, it's not balanced. I mean, energy use, and we use a lot of energy, actually helps extend human life and protects us. I mean, our quality of life is dependent to some degree on the energy we use. I mean, air conditioning is protective. You know, transportation is helpful. A lot of this depends on energy and our lifestyle. And the rest of the world wants this lifestyle, too. So you go to places like India, they're willing to put coal-fired plants online because they know they're going to save lives with that. Even if the planet warms, they're going to save lives by using more energy. So, I mean, we have to find a way to get other energy sources. We will do that. But, you know, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We need energy to live the way we want to live.
And I know I've talked to you about this before. What I've said is man plays some role in my view. I don't think anybody truly knows to what extent. And people get berserk with me and say, don't you believe the 96% scientific consensus? And when I see stuff like this University of Washington study as printed in the Seattle Times, my reply is, no, I don't believe. If that's what's part of the 96% scientific consensus, then no, I am not on board with this.
Well, Dory, you know, we got to forget about the 97% stuff. That's completely nonsense. But one thing, you know, we have to stress is the best science, and, you know, I'm involved in this as well. The best science indicates if we keep on putting more CO2 in the atmosphere, the planet's going to warm significantly. I mean, that I don't think that's fairyland. I think that is real. I think that these kind of studies that exaggerate the effects of warming, they don't do anybody any good, and it's just like crying wolf, and it undermines people like me who are trying to follow a strictly factual approach.
And it undermines people like me who actually, you know what I did, Chris, or Cliff, last weekend? I bought an e-bike, and I've been riding my 25-mile round-trip commute every day to work because I'm the true environmentalist in Seattle media. How about that?
Well, that's good, and I bicycle to work, too. So, I mean, the other thing that people have to do is give up on some of these airplane trips they're taking.
Yeah.
You know, one trip to overseas is equivalent to commuting a modest a distance every day to work. So, you know, it's the totality that's important, and you do what you can.
I always appreciate the sanity you always bring to these conversations, Cliff. Thank you very much for taking the time to come on with me today.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
As always, I'd love to hear what you think. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Thinking about retiring in Washington State? Think again. A bad idea, according to Bankrate.com rating of best places to retire, Washington State ranks as the fifth worst state in the nation to retire, according to their recent study. They examined 11 public and private data sets related to the life of retiree, including affordability, wellness, weather, culture, and crime. And Washington State did not score well in any of those categories. Ranked in the bottom 15 in all but culture, where it ranked 25th. The worst score came in affordability. That's where we landed at 41st. So where should you be retiring? Apparently that's Nebraska. But upon reading that, I thought, there's got to be a way. I mean, I have been thinking, I'm nowhere near retirement, but I have been thinking that far forward now, thinking about, you know, where would I retire in Washington State? It's going to be so expensive. How would you, you know, how could you save up enough money to make sure that you could maintain the same standard of living? You know, you got to make sure your house is paid for, good luck to you, all that kind of thing. And I look at it and, you know, I thought, well, maybe you could move to some place where the, you know, the cost of living is much less. And I've seen people, I've known people who've said, well, I'm moving to Nebraska or Iowa. And I just think, oh, God, so flat. There's nothing there. I mean, I guess maybe you'd start to like the wheat fields or corn fields, but
Omaha is supposed to be kind of a cool town, good music scene.
Well,
I know that's important to you.
Can I buy a CD? You know, yeah. I mean, come on. So, I mean, Washington State is a great place. And I can see, like, when you look at the housing prices in Tacoma and Snohomish County are going way up and Skagit County skyrocketing, everybody's kind of spilling out from Seattle and Bellevue and Kirkland and Redmond and looking outward for an affordable home. And by the way, we're still considered a bargain when it comes to the high-tech world. I read a story, I can't remember if it was Forbes or Wall Street Journal a while back, where Washington's, the greater Seattle area was still considered a total bargain when it came to high-tech hubs. because our housing prices are so much lower. So just when you look at, hey, the median house price is $790,000, you think, oh my gosh, this has got to fall. And then you read about all these other high-tech hubs and the median housing price is like $1.2 million or $1.3 million. You start to think, oh my gosh, you know, where's the ceiling here? What's going to happen? So in this case, you know, we fail in these various categories. The problem is, you know, I look at the mountains. You've got snow-packed Olympics, you know, snow-capped Olympics there. Off in the distance, look at the Puget Sound, beautiful Mount Rainier, Mount Baker, the gorgeous Skagit Valley, the San Juan Islands, Whidbey Island, you know, Bainbridge. You've got great towering evergreen trees and the glistening beauty of Lake Washington. And you think, is it worth – there's got to be a price to that too. And so I guess the moral of the story here is unless you want to end up in Nebraska, you got to increase your 401k contributions. And, you know, and right now the 401k is doing very well. Stock market keeps going up, and hopefully your investments are too. But, you know, if you want to retire here, going to have that home. Maybe build that mother-in-law apartment even if you don't need it because you might have to rent it out to somebody in order to keep your home or to have the extra spending income.
That's what I'm counting on is your mother-in-law.
Yeah, or Airbnb, you know, get that action going. So there's a video out showing drivers in Georgia stopping to grab $175,000 from an armored vehicle. Apparently, they say they were driving along this, and one of the doors of the armored vehicle slid open. And I'm trying to figure out how that happens. I thought armored trucks were their whole design was not to accidentally open up, not to have to be spilling cash on the freeway. They didn't leave the bag out. They just had the door open, and the wind kind of sucked the cash out. So $175,000 out there, about $4,000 has been returned by people. And they say it's people, you know, that had a second thought, but I could see stopping to pick up money and give it back to them later, especially if a bunch of people are stopping and grabbing the money. And the video shows people kind of going crazy. It's like they're in one of those boxes that you see on some game shows where you grab as much cash as possible. But to me, it's the kind of thing where ultimately it's not your money. It is theft, both legally and technically it's theft. So I can certainly understand where the temptation would come from, but doing it is an altogether different incident. So they're asking the public to give back the money. Some people are kind of laughing. Police said, well, we certainly understand that temptation. It's still theft. The money should be returned. We're thankful there was no crashes or pedestrians struck as a result of this isolated cash storm. My favorite part there was, the rest of it's boilerplate, but the fact that they call it an isolated cash storm, you know, as though there's a widespread cash storm somewhere. I'd like to live in that part. That's the place I'd like to retire. Wherever they're having widespread cash storms, you know, that I might make it. Next hour, we'll be carrying President Trump's remarks live regarding the census. CNN was reporting earlier that he's gonna not have an executive order on the census question. We'll find out what's coming up. About that coming up, David Bowe's in for Dory Monson.